So this is the usual disclosures. We don't have any personal or financial relationships with any commercial interests that would in any way color or bias what we're about to present today. So as way of background, I'm going to talk a little bit about a study that we've been working on with collaborators at EPA Region 9 and my other academic collaboratives. And this comes in the wake of increasing effort and reports on the part of agencies and scientists to really think about how we address cumulative impacts and the intersection and potential interactions of environmental and social stressors and their impacts on health outcomes and health disparities. So we have the recent NRC Committee on Improving Risk Analysis that addressed that issue and EPA's framework for cumulative risk assessment. The NEJAC has been pushing us to address this issue for quite some time. And so out of this, we were able to create this collaborative with folks at Region 9 and with the California Department of Public Health and some other academic collaborators to work on the project that I'm going to present to you today. So just as kind of an outline, I think what a lot of these reports that have been coming out that I just recently cited are really trying to get at what people call either the double or the triple jeopardy of environmental discrimination. And so those three things really look at disparities in exposures, and this is a potential list, by no means exhaustive, as well as social vulnerability factors, or what I like to call extrinsic factors, related to poverty, food insecurity, lack of healthcare access, racism, and gender roles. And then biological susceptibility, or what we call intrinsic factors related to age, underlying disease, malnutrition, and sex. So traditionally, risk assessment and regulatory science has done a lot of work looking at the age and sometimes underlying disease and sex, but has not really, until recently, started to systematically begin to figure out how we consider these extrinsic factors. And the question is, how much do all of these combine to create synergies or additive effects that can at least partially explain environmental health disparities? So for this project, the research questions that we looked at was, we were interested in California, we're very fortunate to have a good birth outcomes registry, and that data is available to scientists who want to look at it. And so we wanted to look at what's the association between traffic burden and adverse birth outcomes, because the issue of traffic impacts on health has also become of mounting concern. But there, until recently, there's been relatively little work. A lot of that work has been looking at respiratory outcomes. We wanted to look at in terms of birth outcomes. And then the second question is, do we see a stronger relationship between air pollution or traffic burden exposures and adverse birth outcomes when we look at vulnerability indicators in the analysis? And we looked at both individual level from information that we could get from the birth certificates, such as maternal education and maternal race ethnicity, among others. But we also wanted to look at area level metrics based on census data that get at both at neighborhood. In this case, we operationalized it as census tracts, but also how do we conceptualize the county that people are living in terms of social inequality metrics. So we're going to talk specifically about racial residential segregation, but we also looked at income inequality. I don't have time to present it all today. So we did exposure assessment looking at about 1.7 million births between the years 2001 and 2006, and we the Paul English's team at the California Department of Public Health was kind enough to link mothers' residents to traffic burden metrics, which were estimated in a variety of different ways, summing traffic counts from all road segments within about a 300-meter buffer of the mother's residence. And we looked at length, weighted, distance weighted, and length, distance weighted to sort of assess whether and how the different ways in which we calculated traffic burden affected our results. So here's an example. You see here's a location of a potential birth. This is actually my office building, but just to give you an example. And then the 300-foot buffer, and you can look at the nearest road segment and then also the highest volume road segment, which is this one within this buffer. So the birth outcomes that I'm going to show you today look at changes in average birth weight in grams among full-term births, which we looked at 39 to 42 weeks gestation, and then the risk of preterm delivery, looking at 28 to 36 weeks versus 39 to 42 weeks. And we looked at some interactions by place-based SES measures. Again, I'm going to present to you a very small subset of these. So one of the things I think that's important to look at just generally across the state is that there are definite racial disparities as well as income disparities, which are, I'm not showing today, in the traffic burden measures. So these darker bars are the ones where the traffic burdens are highest. And so you can see that particularly for Black residents, Asian Pacific Islanders, somewhat Hispanics tend to be pretty much higher. So we first looked at the change in birth weight associated with distance-weighted traffic density, and our sort of base models were just adjusting for gestational age and infant sex. And so this is the lowest traffic burden, and this is the highest level of traffic burden. And you can see in the unadjusted models about a 30-gram average decrement in birth weight. And then when you add a lot of the individual level variables related to the mother and the infant, as well as some place-based measures at the census tract level, including poverty, unemployment, home ownership, and educational attainment, these relationships are somewhat attenuated, but you still see a persistence of about an average 10-gram decrement in birth weight. In terms of risk of preterm delivery, we looked at that in relationship, again, our sort of base models, and we saw a small relationship here, and then when we added the individual level and place-based metrics, those relationships were also attenuated, but we still saw a persistent yet small increase in risk in preterm delivery in the groups that were in the higher traffic burden area. So we wanted to look at segregation because this is a metric that actually hasn't been looked at in terms of potential interactive effects. It's an interesting measure because it looks at, it's a metric of county level or metro area inequality. And you can measure it residentially, occupationally, educationally. We looked at residentially. And generally it looks at didactic comparisons, Black versus white, Latino versus white, et cetera. But we looked at it in terms of multi-group segregation, the physical separation of multiple groups from each other, because of course cities are characterized by multiple racial and ethnic groups. It's not a Black-white world anymore, particularly in major metropolitan areas of the United States. So we used a metric known as the Generalized Index of Dissimilarity, which characterizes counties or metropolitan statistical areas. In this case, we looked at counties. In terms of the spatial unevenness, in terms of the distribution of different racial and ethnic groups across census tracts within each county. So if each one of these big boxes is a county, and then each one of the smaller boxes is a census tract, if you had uneven distributions of racial and ethnic groups, you would get these kinds of patterns. If you had all even, you would have basically a purple county where you have a good mixing of red and blue groups, for example. So it's basically a metric that says what proportion of people would have to move from one tract to another in order to achieve spatial evenness, and that metric spans from 0 to 1. This basically looks at the United States, for those of you who are curious, in terms of areas of extremely high segregation in red versus areas of lower segregation, which are in yellow. So what did we see in California? We stratified our data by the segregation of counties, and what we found was that there appears to be a weak but a visible potential interactive effect in some of the most highly segregated counties in the state. Compared to the other areas for birth weight. In terms of risk of preterm delivery, these effects showed sort of were stronger in more segregated areas, but they weren't statistically significant. So the implications of this the preliminary results from this analysis is that traffic burden appears to be associated with lower average birth weight and a higher risk of preterm delivery. And we see that this effect persists after we control not only for the individual level characteristics of the mother and the infant, but also when we take into account some of the neighborhood level variables of socioeconomic status. These results were consistent across the different exposure assessment metrics that we looked at, so length weighted, distance weighted, length and distance weighted metrics of traffic burden. And we did see some weak interactive effects for county level multi-group segregation. It's not something I, want to overemphasize, and I think it's interesting that we saw any effect at all in a state like California, where the variability in segregation, as you saw on that national map, is pretty low. California overall is considered to be moderately to a low segregation state, and yet even in that place, you're seeing potential very weak interactive effects by segregation. So one of the continuing projects is to expand our analysis to other states, not looking at traffic pollution, but to look at air pollution effects across multiple states where the variability in segregation is broader, to see if we perhaps see stronger effects in terms of the birth outcomes and the interactive effects of segregation. So the implications are that, non-environmental stressors are, I think, key both in epidemiological analysis and in cumulative impacts analysis. There's a lot of really great work that's getting into sort of the science of susceptibility or the science of vulnerability and ways in which we can think about how social vulnerability can enhance community vulnerability to the toxic effects of pollutants, and I think work like this just is adding to the body of evidence to suggest that we need to be heading in that direction. And I would suggest that in addition to looking at sort of neighborhood level metrics at the census tract level, that we want to start looking at metrics that get at questions of community civic engagement capacity. We can measure that by things like voter turnout, linguistic isolation of households, and other sort of non-traditional neighborhood SES measures to get a sense of what is it about neighborhoods or counties and communities that might make people more vulnerable to the toxic effects of pollutants. And we want to look at place-level measures of discrimination, poverty, and social inequality. So metrics of income inequality and segregation are nice places to start, and other people are starting to do interesting work in that respect, and I'm happy to talk about it during Q&A. So the other thing I want to point out is that this type of traffic study, I think, is very useful from a policy standpoint. It's not telling us which pollutant is causing the adverse birth outcome. We're not getting at that sort of which pollutant is the culprit. We are measuring something called traffic, and we know that traffic has an adverse impact in health, and that gives us a direct policy lever for potential interventions. Without necessarily having to know the exact mechanism in which pollutant it is. So I think it's nice to have a balance in terms of looking at sort of policy-relevant exposure metrics along with more precise pollution-specific metrics that sort of point the way towards potential interventions to improve health. And the other thing is we want to look at regional and neighborhood differences because a lot of zoning, land use, and facility siting decisions operate regionally. And this can have an impact on health, and I think we're getting better at measuring these things. So I will finish now, and I just want to acknowledge our funders, US EPA and the California Air Resources Board. Thank you.